Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Conceive, believe, achieve. Shut the fuck up.
This is Believe You Me on the Gas Digital Network.
All right, Monday morning, afternoon. Welcome to the show, Believe You Me podcast, episode 300. Whoa.
Oh, shit.
It just occurred to me as I was just doing the little cheesy intro. In fact, I had Darren Till lined up for today we should have done a bonanza. You know, we should have had all kinds of guests calling in, messages from people, how we've changed the life of so many people and inspired fighters and how they come to this page for news and sources of inspiration. But we decided to do nothing.
No, this is the bonanza. Shh, Bisping, quiet. Welcome to the episode 300, the crazy bonanza we have planned for today. Wow, the show we put together to celebrate 300 episodes. You guys have no idea.
Yeah, we're just going to do what we do usually, but we're just going to be a little bit more excitable this time because it's 300 episodes. That is when did we start this podcast? Like 2016?
150 weeks ago.
Not necessarily, because it used to be one a week.
You're right.
For a while.
Damn, and
it was audio only as well for a long time. You know what I mean? But anyway, thank you for sticking with us, because if it weren't for you guys, we wouldn't be on episode 300. And that doesn't sound genuine, but it is genuine. We thank each and every single one of you. Thank you very much. It's no good podcasting to nobody.
Yeah.
So as I say, thanks for listening.
It's a dance. We're leading the dance, but you guys are a hell of a sexy dance partner. Without you guys, we'd just be dancing by ourselves. It'd be a little
bit
weird.
They're the DJ. Right, we're dancing away, they're DJing, you know, sometimes could be a better DJ, that's all I'm saying. Like, I like DJs that go out there and tell their friends to subscribe. I like DJs that share our content all over the world and help us grow our fan base and grow our wallets as well. That's what I like DJs to do.
Yeah, of course, obviously, that's what I expect of a DJ, is to share our content.
anyway, let's give this another shot. Welcome to the show, everyone. Monday morning, a lot of big fights at the weekend. Jan Blachowicz, Israel Adesanya. Tremendous fight card, actually, from start to finish. So we'll get into all of that stuff in a little bit. And, of course, we've got a lot of MMA news to talk about as well. Today is the first day of the rest of my life, Lewis. And I know I've said that before, but it's a new Mikey B. It's a new Michael Bisping. It's the count 2.0 today.
Question, just before we begin into whatever your next endeavor to better yourself is, when's the last time you had a drink?
Last night. I didn't have a drink though. I had two glasses of wine and a beer with sushi. That's
three drinks. Okay.
Yeah, but it's not. Let's keep it in context. It's not like, oh, I'm having a session. It's not like, oh, I'm getting hard on it tonight. I'm going to have a real drink, boys. No, I went out for sushi. I had a beer. And then when I got back, I had a couple of glasses of vino and off to bed, we pop. But I knew today was the day because obviously I was on all kinds of medication for a long time. And that was taking a while to run out. So I flushed them all down the toilet last night. The medication's gone. And today, because we knew we were doing this on Monday as well. We knew Rebecca and I.
Flushed all the medication. We could have given that away to a listener. One of the DJs that are out there listening to the show, we could have had a contest where you win all of Michael Bisping's medication.
That's called drug dealing, Lewis.
Not if you get it away for free.
I'm pretty sure if somebody died, I'd still be fucked. Do you know what I mean? Somebody had an overdose. Like, well, we'd never charge them for it. I'd still be culpable or it would still be my fault anyway. And you said you were going to do this with me, Lewis, and so did Harrington and so did Brian. I'm doing a 2-week sugar fast today, zero sugar whatsoever. So that's no alcohol, of course, first and foremost, no fruit, no bread, pasta, rice, you know, certain vegetables, certainly no fruits. I had a protein shake this morning. No berries. That was hard. That tasted like shit, I'll be honest. But the health benefits of ultimately 100% cutting out sugar are vast. So I'm giving it a go. 2 weeks. Are you in, Lewis?
What inspired you for this?
What inspired me? Well,
you read something, you saw some video. There was something that triggered this because you're talking about the health benefits of no sugar. It's going to be a shock to the system. You're using some buzzwords. Whose horseshit did you read?
No, it's not horseshit, actually. If you just Google sugar fast, the health benefits, it'll come up with tons of stuff. But you're right, I did stumble across something which inspired me. Forgive me for fucking being inspired. Forgive me for reading something, seeing it, and thinking, wow, that would be a good idea to implement in my life. And I did. I stumbled across a YouTube video, and there was some guy with his shirt off, ripped a bit, boring the hell out of me and telling me things I already knew. But it's true. You know, sugar is a poison. It is a toxin to the body and makes you crave it, and it messes with your blood sugar levels. It messes with your weight. Obviously, for every gram of carbohydrate you hold on to, you ingest, you hold on to 4 grams of water, all kinds of stuff. So, the health benefits, if you Google it, are very, very long. And I thought, you know what? If I can't do 2 weeks, then that's a sad state of affairs.
Have you ever done like a true keto diet where you're doing like you're in ketosis, you tested your urine, all that other stuff?
Well, that's essentially what this is, right? You know, it's keto, because in keto you remove the carbs. But with keto, obviously, there is still a percentage of carbs you are allowed and things like that. And it's open to interpretation. Thank you very much. Yeah, you know, interpret it. And I generally follow keto anyway as a rule, but I don't go into ketosis. I try and follow low carb, you know, but I'm never in ketosis. So I thought, right, if I do this, I should definitely be in ketosis for 2 weeks and walk around like a fucking,
With keto, it's like everything, like no tomatoes. You can't even have vegetables that have color. So you can have like a red pepper or
carrots.
Yeah, none of that. It's got to be just greens, leafy greens. I've done it before. I've done it for like a month and a half before, where it was like a true keto diet. I had the test strips. It's fucking miserable. It's really hard to maintain. As a shock to the system, I like the idea. And yes, I will join you in this endeavor. I just started intermittent fasting. So in conjunction with intermittent fasting, if I really cut down the carbs, I'm going to lose weight quickly. And I have a vacation coming up in the beginning of April. So I would like to look good on the beach. So it's actually just a little serendipitous that you would even bring this up right now. It's perfect timing.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, as I say, it's nothing new, but Rebecca's on board with this as well. That's the hard part. Anybody listening here, I suggest you give it a go as well. In fact, if you want to join in with us, take a picture of you with your shirt off, and in 2 weeks' time, I want to see the results, because you're going to lose weight. You're going to lose a lot of weight. You're going to feel good. You're going to feel healthier.
Are you asking
more energy throughout the day? You're not going to be taking naps. You're not going to be tired. You're not going to have that. You know when you eat, you just want to fall asleep straight afterwards. Apparently all that is eradicated, way more energy as well. So go on. You were going to say,
Robson, you want young men to take pictures of themselves with no clothes on and send them to you.
That's what it's all about. Ultimately, it's just a ploy for me to get pictures of people with their shirts off. You know what I'm saying? And hey, listen, 2021, what's wrong with that, Lewis?
There's nothing wrong with that. To be honest, it's International Women's Day. So as a celebration of International Women's Day, we want you to send semi-nude photos to us. All the men that watch this show, we would love to see semi-nudes, and we will gawk at them like we were women.
Well, we can take a look and pat them on the back or pat them on the bottom.
Pat them on the front.
Wherever you want patting, we'll pat you. Let that be known. For all our DJs out there, you get a good pat on the back from the Believe You Me podcast. Why not? It's a little fun little interazione. I'm doing it. I'm going to have a transformation, and I'm done with booze, and I'm making a difference in my life. And we'll see.
Are you posting a before and after photo?
I mean, I will do. What was I on the scale this morning? I was heavy this morning because I knew as well. Also, I knew Monday I was starting this. We've had this in our minds for about a week now, Rebecca and I. So I was like, okay, we'll screw it. You know what I mean? Because Monday is going to get pretty miserable pretty quick. So over the weekend, we indulged a little bit. And as I say, I had sushi last night, which is tons of carbs. So I was like 220 this morning. In two weeks.
Today's the first day of this.
Today's the first day. So far, I had a protein shake with a big handful of greens and some other bits and bats in it. No sugar, of course. And that's all I've had to eat so far today. Tonight, chicken thighs with salad. Delicious. Can't wait.
All right, I want to see a before and after photo. Today, you have to take a picture with your shirt off. And then in 2 weeks, you should be fucking shredded.
I should be. I will be. Because I get down to 215 pretty easily. Right, and if I can get down to 210, that'd be my goal weight. I reckon after this, I want to say 207 pounds. Whew, baby boy, it's going to be out of fucking control. Me at 207 pounds, man, my God, call the cops.
That's it. It's too hot. Honestly, if you take that picture and you show it to everyone, it'll be too much. You're going to have too much sex appeal for this audience. I take it all back. Take no pictures, Bisping.
I apologize. You know, it is International Women's Day. And I went to Instagram earlier this morning. And I put a little picture of Rebecca in there, and I said, waiting for International Men's Day. It just, you know, just being silly and stupid. Is there an International Men's Day? Oh, there is.
For sure. For sure. I don't know what it is. I think we're considered Nazis if we celebrate it, but I'm going to go for it this year.
I'm going for it big time. Okay, oh, yeah. Listen, I'm just throwing it out there. If it weren't for men, listen, women don't need an International Appreciation Day. Women are appreciated every day. Certainly in my house, certainly the men I know, we appreciate women. We thank women. They are essential to modern society. They are awesome. They have a lot to give, all the rest of it. But so are the fucking men, okay? I'm throwing this out there. With no men, no pyramids in Egypt. No fucking Statue of Liberty, no Empire State Building. You know what I mean? Women are not busting their back and carrying those giant rocks up the side of a pyramid. I'm just throwing it out there. And I'm not a male chauvinistic pig either. I love women. I have a wife. I have the daughter. I love my mother. I wish women all the best. We should have an equal pay, all the rest of it. But still, no men, no pyramids.
No men, no pyramids. I mean,
no men, no fucking pyramids.
I'm pretty
man.
Sure they were built by ancient slaves, but that's okay.
Yeah, but they were men.
Goddamn right.
Maybe some young men, maybe some boys.
If they were women, they'd still be building that fucking pyramid right now. Let's get real.
Whining about it, having lots of meetings about it, you know.
Oh my God.
No, I'm kidding. Listen, International Women's Day, congratulations to everybody, of course. Come on. Yeah. What are you doing? How are you marking the day, Lewis? It's a big day for you.
I'm just going to get a hooker and maybe, I don't know, I'll tip her. I'll give her a little bit of a tip.
Pay her well. Make sure
I'll pay her well.
Yeah, of course.
No, I don't celebrate international. My girlfriend gets treated like a princess every fucking day, every single day. This is the one day a year I'm not going to treat her well. She should have to make me dinner tonight.
No, well, it's kind of a weird way of looking at it, but hey, whatever makes you happy, you know. But yeah,
did you see Burger King's tweet?
I did not. What was Burger King's tweet?
They said, women belong in the kitchen. And then they responded to it. It was like a troll job. And they were like, only 20% of chefs are women. And we want to change that. That's like the response to it. But the first tweet was just, women belong in the kitchen. And of course, just people freak out immediately. They're like, you have to delete this, Burger King. If you're a woman and you get offended by Burger King tweeting that, you have to reassess where you're at in your life. You're not as strong as you think you are if that's all it takes is a little bit of a trolling from a fast food company's Twitter.
Oh, listen. Yeah. Lighten up. Get a sense of humor. You know what I mean? Is what I would say, because people are so offended by everything these days. And you're right. Maybe there should be more women in the kitchen, but it's just a play on words. It's a joke. UFC fighters. In fact, I made that joke years ago. I think it was UFC 208. No, not 208, what am I saying? 88, pardon me, in Birmingham at the press conference. I think women's mixed martial arts were just, you know, just starting to take off. And I got asked, what do you think about women's mixed martial arts, Michael? And I'm at the press conference, you know, on the microphone. And I'm like, yeah, great. They're awesome. But surely they're not going to have enough time with all the cooking and the cleaning and stuff. Just a very stupid joke, very old fashioned now and out of date. But at the time, I got a good laugh. That's all I care about.
Did you get a lot of shit from that?
No, did I help? Because you know why? Because people have a sense of humor. You say it when you're laughing, you deliver it in the right way. It's clearly a joke. Come on, lighten up, everybody. Everybody wants to be offended these days. Where'd you watch the fights on Saturday, Lewis?
I watched them here. I came home. I had a show I went to in Brooklyn, did a quick set, ran home for the main card. Had a ton of fun. My new thing is I've been watching it with my son, because my son stays with me on, you know, Thursday through Sunday. So Saturday nights when the fights are on, he loves it. He's really, really becoming a big fan. And this is like he's watched it in the past before, and he's been training and he's done jiu-jitsu and Muay Thai for a while. But now he actually wants to stay awake. Like, he got upset because he had a shower, like, I guess it was during the Islam Makhachev fight. I was like, go shower. There's three title fights. Take a shower now real quick so you can come and watch him. And he heard us like screaming with the arm bar that he caught at the end of the first round. And he was so upset. He was like, oh, I missed a really exciting part. So it's pretty cool. Like, I love being able to share that with my kid. I never had a dad growing up, so there was never like watching baseball or football on the TV. So I've never sort of had that bonding experience. Bisping just yelled, "Shut up!" He turned his microphone off for the video listeners. For the video watching,
fucking dog Harry, he is over there, going on. I'm gonna strangle that dog. Oh my god! Good. I'm glad you watched the fights. I'm glad you enjoyed them. FYI, next time if you want to send him for a shower, maybe do it the prelims. But of course, when you're on the prelims, that's when you get the most viewers. Did you watch Dominic Cruz versus Casey Kennedy?
Did you catch that one? I came in right as the pay-per-view was starting. I know what happened, but I didn't end up watching it, though.
It was a good fight. Good fight, close fight. I think, you know, Casey Kennedy actually looked really good. He caught Cruz with a few punches, as you can see on the state of Dominic's face. Can you do whatever you can do to keep those dogs quiet back? Because they're driving me insane. I might murder them. Okay, she put them outside. Anyway, Cruz definitely ate a few shots, landed a few close fight. But the game plan clearly for Cruz was he was trying to take him down. He was really smart in the first 10 seconds of the fight. He shot a takedown. Kenny defended it. Wasn't successful, but he continued doing that throughout the fight. And what impressed me was the tenacity of Cruz, because a lot of the time when you're trying to get takedowns and you don't get it, it's very exhausting. But he continued going, you know, going to the well time and time again. And in rounds 2 and 3, he actually did get the takedown. And that was actually the deciding factor, in my opinion, for why he won the fight. But then afterwards, he called out Hans Molenkamp. It was a guy. I don't really want to get into it too much because it's politics. It's none of my business. But did you see that? Do you know anything about that?
I have no idea what happened.
Yeah, it was a big... It's been spoken about. So, well, in fact, fucking Cruz spoke about it on TV. So I'm not letting anything out of the bag here. No, he's a guy that... you know, he facilitates sponsorship deals for some fighters. He represents Monster, of course. Lots of UFC fighters are sponsored by Monster. And he just, I don't know, he called him out. He said, "Oh, yeah, I want to fight Hans." You know, he holds us all hostage to these contracts. He makes us like his Instagram videos and things like that. This is what Cruz said. He said, "So I'm calling him out. Let's raise some money for charity. I want to fight this guy. He's got £100 on me." So yeah, there you go. I've had some dealings with the guy. I can confirm I'm on Cruz's side. But then Dana came out of the post-fight press conference, obviously. It was just weird why Cruz would do that. Listen, all right, whatever, you got a problem with the guy. You've just come back. You've just got your first win in 5 years and you're using your post-fight celebration to call him out. All right, listen, if you don't like him that much and the guy is that much of a tool, all right, whatever. But, you know, you've just won your fight. Focus on that. Focus on the greatness of your return. Focus on thanking your team and things like that. So, but whatever, that's what we've come to expect from Cruz.
Is he a fighter? I see him training. He looks like a big guy.
He's not a fighter, no. He's not a fighter. He's a wannabe.
IB Times says, Brazilian jiu-jitsu expert Hans Molenkamp wants to be a role model. And I see him doing some Muay Thai. He looks like he's a big enough guy.
Yeah, fat enough guy, for sure, yeah. Listen, I don't want to get into it too much because I don't want a lawsuit on my hands either, because we've had some issues here and there. Just when Dominic Cruz said that, I think a lot of people in the mixed martial arts community that have had to deal with this guy's BS cheered and celebrated. So Dominic Cruz, right. Thank you for what you said there, actually. I take back what I said, you know what I mean? But still, he did it with Kenny Florian as well a few years ago as well. But still, Cruz back in the winning column, much needed, no doubt, pressure off the shoulders.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's fine. He took an opportunity to trash a sponsor guy. It's fine. But at the same time, you still want him to call out somebody that's relevant, that makes sense, a fighter, put him back on that path. We're talking about Dominic Cruz needing to sort of have like a really impressive victory over Casey Kenny in order to sort of be on his back on his path. And then here he is, his focus is on beating up some dude that he has a personal, you know, beef with, which is just kind of funny.
Harrington just felt the need to add this into the notes just to distract him. It's not personal, said it's for charity. Harrington, trust me, I know the guy. I know Dominic Cruz. I know all about the situation, and it's very fucking personal. Yes, he wants to do it for charity. That's a way of masking it so they can get into a ring and he can fight the guy. Although, as you said, Lewis, he is big, and Dominic Cruz is full of balls, and he's very courageous, but he's also very small. Do you know what I mean? And weight classes are there for a reason.
Yeah, I guess he has $100 on Dominic, or $100, 100 pounds on Dominic. So, I don't know. I'm assuming that any UFC fighter is going to be able to handle anybody who isn't a professional martial artist for the most part. But do you think that Dominic Cruz did enough in the victory over Casey Kenny to sort of put him back on that track, you know, in the title hunt?
I don't know about title hunt. 135 is kind of, you know, there's a lot of talent there right now. Obviously, Aljamain and Peter Yan, they're going to do that. Piotr are going to do that again. We'll get into that in a little bit. A lot to talk about there, a lot to discuss. Then you got TJ Dillashaw coming back. Corey Sandhagen's probably going to fight TJ. And then there's, you know, there's other people in the mix as well. So title mix, probably not. You know, it was a, that's the problem. Anytime you step down the not the undercard, but step down the rankings a little bit. And I mean that with respect to Casey Kenny. He gave him a very tough fight. What you're going to see is a drop in brand name. You're going to drop in fan recognition, but you don't necessarily get the same drop in ability.
In caliber of fighter,
In the caliber of fighter. You know, those guys that are all ranked, you know, 1 through 10, you know what I mean? There's not much that separates them. Of course, Anderson Silva in his day was leaps and bounds against everybody, ahead of everybody. So was John Jones back in the day, and I'm sure there's other examples as well that I'm missing. But still, from 5 to 10, there's not much that separates them. From 10 to 15, again, and then from 15 to 20, they're all chomping at the bit, you know what I mean? You don't.
And they're all hungry as fuck. These are guys that are on their way up, that are like, you know, the hustle and the drive that these guys have, they can visualize the title hunt. They're finally cracking the top 10. They do not want to lose. Not saying that Dominic Cruz wants to lose, but Dominic Cruz has been in the big show for so long that you sort of lose sight of that drive and hunger. I'm assuming it has to fade over time.
Yeah, I don't know about that, because for somebody like Cruz, and it was kind of like myself as well, no, I don't think it does diminish over time. I think for some people, certainly that is true. I won't name names, but there's certainly some examples that spring to mind immediately. You know, they rest on the laurels, they start getting a little bit lazy, money comes in, the bank account is nice and full. You know, like Holyfield said, you don't get out of bed at 5 a.m. in the morning when you're sleeping in silk sheets. But for some people, it does, you know, it doesn't apply. It didn't to me. I still push myself to the limit every time. Dominic Cruz, I would assume it would as well, because that's his identity. That's who he is. And it was the same thing with me. That was my identity. And for Dominic Cruz, that's who you are. You're the fighter. You're the tough guy. You're the man at 135. And that is your legacy. And that is everything that around you stems from that. It comes from that. Do you know what I'm saying? If he starts losing to Casey Kenny, that diminishes, that goes away. And then he becomes like a legend of yesterday. Well, he doesn't want that, because fighters have tremendous egos, and that ego inside him will not allow it. And that's why, for those reasons, having that ego, that chip on your shoulder, older, that can be your best friend as a fighter.
I'm a fan of Dominic Cruz. He is just, I mean, he's so old school at this point, and that's not a knock on him at all. He's been around for a really, really long time. The fact that he's still able to not only be competitive but beat these guys that are coming up, it's a testament to sort of you know, where he's at and the drive that he does have. What do you see next for him? Because
Cruz, I'm not sure. I don't know. I mean, I think he would have liked that fight to go a little smoother. But listen, as I just said, Casey Kenny's a tough guy, and he got a hard fought victory. It was a close fight, you know, but those takedowns really made the difference. So fair play. I'm not sure. I mean, the thing is, he's not getting any younger. He's 36 now, I believe. So he hasn't got too much time to waste. So I don't know. He seems pretty unscathed. You know, he's got a couple of black eyes and whatnot. Not that, a few bumps and bruises. But in a week or two, he's going to be good to go. So if I was him, I'd say, get me back in there ASAP. I've got no time to waste. He's had far too much time on the sidelines through injuries over the years. You know what I mean? So the earning potential, the window of opportunity is diminishing. So if I was him, I'd say, get me back in there quick as you can. And then against a really highly ranked guy. And then maybe after that, then he might get a shot at the title. Because I'm assuming that's what he wants. That's what everybody wants. Certainly a legend of the game like Cruz. Anyway, okay, support for the Believe You Me podcast is brought to you by Manscaped. Who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming? Manscaped offers precision engineered tools for your family jewels. They obsess over their technology developments to provide you the best tools for your grooming experience. And Manscaped is trusted by over 2 million men worldwide. Join the movement for your below-the-waist grooming needs. And now, I apologize to all the listeners. Now we're going to hear about Lewis and his ball-shaving habits, how he cuts himself and things. Go ahead.
No, listen to me. First of all, we all have done that. This is something that people can relate to. Everyone has tried to trim their family jewels downstairs and made a mistake. Maybe nicked yourself. Maybe you're using a Bic. Maybe you're using hair trimmers. Who knows? It's dangerous work, okay? It's like you're trying to use hedge trimmers on a bush, but that bush is attached to your number one most prized possession. You want to be careful, and Manscaped makes that easy.
Yeah, and guess what? We're now on the third generation. I mean, the first generation was mind-blowing, but now we're on the third, which features cutting-edge ceramic blade, right?
And when don't I tell say you cutting-edge.
Cutting-edge. It's a play on words. It's a double entendre. And when I tell you this is premium, I mean premium. The battery lasts up to 90 minutes. The waterproof technology allows you to groom in the shower. And, of course, the coolest feature, the little itty-bitty LED light, which illuminates the grooming area for closer and more precise trimming.
To be fair, I need a huge light. You might need a little itty-bitty light. I need a headlight essentially attached to my Manscaped.
Hey, listen, you know, horses for courses, Lewis. And let's not forget about the charging stand as well. You know what I mean? If you're using it a lot, if you've got a fucking giant ball sack like Lewis, you're going to need a giant charging stand. Well, guess what? This was minimalistic. It's futuristic, but it charges the motherfucker. That's all you need to know. Listen, at the end of the day, trim your balls. Don't hurt yourself. Do it in style and do it with a great deal. Go to manscaped.com, man, S-C-A-P-E-D, manscaped.com. Use that code Bisping20. You get 20% off and free shipping once more. Manscaped.com. Code is Bisping20. Your balls are going to thank you and your bank account will say thank you very much because you get 20% off of free shipping. All right. Moving on. Lots of other fights to talk about. Rakic versus Santos. That was the opening card of the fight. You know, it wasn't what we all expected. That, you know, Rakic has delivered a lot of violence inside the octagon and Thiago Santos is just an animal inside there, you know. But it was a smart fight for Rakic. He used his reach advantage for the most part. But it wasn't, you know, it wasn't, I don't think, what everybody expected. Was it a bad fight? Was it a bad fight at all? That's not what I'm saying. But I really expected fireworks. And probably that's maybe my fault, Lewis, you know, when you go in with your expectations too high.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think they were talking about Santos's movement. I guess he wasn't being as fluid. I speaking from my perspective, I can't really, you know, speak on that. But I'll tell you right now, when Santos hits, it looks fucking hard as hell. That's the one thing I'll say. He looked like he was the harder hitter of the two. Rakic just looked like he used his range really well. He stayed sort of on the outside, didn't let Santos get off the way that he should have. But I thought it was a pretty exciting fight overall. I mean, everyone in my house thought it was good.
Yeah, no. It wasn't a bad fight. You know, it was not a bad fight at all. So congrats to Alexander Rakic. Well, I think he wants to come on again. So maybe we'll have him on Thursday. We've got Ben Askren on Thursday as well. We were supposed to have Darren Till, but you know what, Darren, we don't need you today, mate. All right. We've got enough to talk about without you, mate. So, you know, just jog on, lads. Shout out Darren Till. What was next? What was the next fight? Oh, Makhachev.
Makhachev, yeah.
Makhachev.
Which, goddamn, dude. Dober. Yo, he looked good. I understand the Khabib comparison. He looked damn near perfect in this fight. You know, I think that, he's definitely a force. I guess they were talking about how he was a massive favorite. I guess he was a -345 favorite, which, you know, I guess some people were questioning that. But he was so dominant in that fight that, you know, to be honest with you, looking at him, I was like, holy shit, I don't know who's going to beat him. He looked so good.
Yeah, I'm just looking at his record, 19-1 now. And it is quite, I mean, he did lose to Aljamain Sterling. Sorry, I'm just looking at my laptop. I might be missing the microphone. Yeah, came into the UFC, won his first one, then lost by a KO. Oh, no. Adriana Martins. What am I saying, Aljamain Sterling? I just saw an A and it looked about the right length of an Aljamain and I went with that. I've got a fucking stigmatism. You might have noticed on the podcast, I do this a lot because I have a stigmatism. So therefore, the contact lens moves. You know what I'm saying? And when it moves, it gets blurry and I can't see. And typically when you've got two eyes, when that happens, that's okay because the other eye takes over. You know, apparently contact lenses do that all the time. But when you've only got one eye, you can't fucking see.
It just goes dark. It's a nightmare for you.
I'm like, oh, it's Aljamain Sterling there. It's Adriana Martins. I just saw an A and I was like, it looks the right length. So I do that all the time.
Once every 15 minutes or so, you'll see Bisping's face go into extreme fear of the darkness.
Lewis, are you there? Are you there, boy? Yeah. So anyway, so there you go. So Adriana Martins, since then, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7 in a row in the UFC, doing well. Do you know what impressed me? Listen, he looked great. The arm boy nearly took his arm home with him at the end of the first round. The wrestling was good. We expected that. What we didn't expect was for Drew Dober, who's a tremendous fighter, by the way. Did you see the physique on the guy?
Yeah, that's all my girlfriend kept on commenting on. I was like, all right, bitch, shut up. I got it. He looks good.
He's been on the 3-week no sugar diet, right? All you DJs out there, all you DJs listening to this, you want to look like Drew Dober? We'll be DJing with our shirts off in Magaluf this summer. Let's fucking go. Ibiza, here we come. No, what impressed me, he fucking submitted him with shoulder pressure, right? Yeah. We had our next door neighbor, Anderson, over at the weekend watching the fights, and he does jiu-jitsu himself as well. And Callum obviously trains. So I'm like, look at that. And we were discussing the shoulder pressure, and it is miserable when a good jiu-jitsu guy is on top of you and they have a really good way of using all their body weight to push into one area and they drive the shoulder into the neck. And it sucks, and it's very, very uncomfortable. I've never seen anybody tap to that though. And Drew Dober's a tough guy. You know, he's a very experienced fighter. You know, good grappler, well-rounded skills, but it just shows that that guy's special. You know, when you factor in, what round was it? It was round three. So Dober's probably getting tired. You know, once you get out of breath and you're a little tired, tapping to chokes is, you do it way quicker because you're already tired. And then once you restrict the breathing further, it's hell. But as I say, tapping to shoulder pressure, man, that guy's strong.
Yeah, it was a little bit weird. You know, but obviously Drew Dober super exhausted at that point. You know, when you have a guy on top of you and you can't get him off, it feels like you're drowning. It's a goddamn nightmare. I mean, I've only grappled with guys that are okay. Well, that's not true. I've grappled with you and it felt like a car was running me over. It was truly a nightmare. But yeah, I mean, when you're exhausted like that, I'm assuming that it just, you know, it was more him tapping to exhaustion than the shoulder pressure, I'm assuming.
It's like Josh Haynes on the Ultimate, this is a throwback here, and only hardcores are going to know this. On the Ultimate Fighter Season 3, when I was on there, Josh Haynes fought Jess. He fought Jesse fucking someone.
Jesse Eisen.
Not Eisenhausen. Jess. Old big Jesse.
I know
Jesse.
Who you're talking about. It's a wrestler guy. He's got like a big head.
Yeah, Big Jesse looks like a fucking Incredible Hulk type. Anyway, they were fighting and Josh Haynes locked in a guillotine and Jesse tapped. And then John McCarthy came over to me straight away and said, you know why he tapped, don't you? I said, why? He said, he was tired. He said, I could hear the breathing on the guy. And and as I said, when you're tired and you already want to just lie down, you don't want to be fighting anymore. You're just like, I'm exhausted, leave me alone. And then you've got somebody choking you. The choke doesn't need to be perfectly placed. It doesn't need to be on the correct part of the neck. It just fucking sucks and you're hating life and you want it to stop. So,
and you can simply do this. Like you could be in a lot of pain and be exhausted and feel like you're dying, feel like you're drowning, or you can simply go, no big deal. It's all over.
But then you're a loser, quite literally. Literally. It's not an opinion piece. It's all over Wikipedia. You got an L. You're a fucking loser. You want to tap like a little bitch? Is that what you want to do? I ain't tapping like no fucking little bitch from exhaustion.
Well, Bismarck doesn't tap. We know that.
Listen, who the fuck taps in this day and age? Come on. Yeah. I'm joking, of course. All right. Well done. Unlucky to Drew Dober. I like Drew. He's a good guy. Great fighter. He'll be back. That's the way it goes. Fucking that Makhachev. Everybody was swinging off his nuts saying how great he was. And I've seen him before and he did look great. But again, he rose to the occasion and looked sensational. The problem is for him finding fights now. I'm not sure what his ranking is, but he's going to struggle getting people to accept fights because just stylistically, he's just such a nightmare for everybody. And he's going to spoil your night. He's going to spoil your event. You know, you want to go out there. You're like, I've had a great training camp. My footwork's great. My striking's awesome. I've been dropping everybody in sparring. Well, that doesn't matter if you just led on the floor with some fucking asshole driving his shoulder into your neck.
With Khabib being in his corner, being his coach, people talking about him like he's the next Khabib, I think he's probably only a fight or two away from, you know, getting a title shot. That's the reality of it. So he's, to be honest with you, he's the guy to beat at 155 right now. Obviously he's not the number one contender, but he's the dude. It kind of reminds me of Khamzat, where like, even though he wasn't ranked at the top of the heap, he has so much hype right now that I feel like you kind of want that win over Khamzat to steal that heat. So yeah, Islam has a ton of heat coming into the next fight. I'm assuming now that Khabib looks like he is all but retired, they're going to sort of make that push for him to be the next dude. And he has a style. It's a very similar style to Khabib.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, and I'm not trying to argue with you, but I can't see any dimension, any world where the UFC are pushing for Islam Makhachev to be the champion over a Conor McGregor, a Dustin Poirier, or any of them guys. No offense to Islam. You know what I mean? May the best man win. You know what I mean? But they want, you know, Islam's going to be. He probably will go in there. He has the style, as you said. I do agree with that. He has the style to beat everybody. I don't think he has the style where the UFC will go, hey, fuck, we need this guy as champ. You know, he's going to have to take that. And looking at the way he fights, he's definitely got the possibility to do that. In fact, you just mentioned Khamzat Chimaev. We might as well get into that right now before we get into the pay-per-view, the title fights, because this is all news now, but we never discussed it. We were all about it. We were discussing Khamzat last week. Seems we discuss Khamzat every week. He took the world by storm. He took the world of mixed martial arts by the balls and made it work for him. But then he apparently came out and retired last week.
What?
Did you not hear about that?
I did not hear about him retiring last week.
Fucking stone has your head been under, right? Crawl back to whatever rock. Can I get a Harrington Gomez, please, on the screen? Did you not see that?
I did not see that he retired. No, I did not.
Yeah. Obviously, the guy had COVID, right? And he's got a lot of underlying health conditions that are still lingering. And he was told not to train by the doctors and things like that. But it's hard. You know, I get told not to train and I'm retired and I'm fat, washed up bastard. My biggest struggle is not eating sugar. Do you know what I'm saying? And I'm still training. That guy.
Bisping, 2 weeks, you might make a comeback to the UFC. Who knows? We're going to see the type of shape you're in 2 weeks.
Bro, if I'm in 207 pounds in 2 weeks, it's over for you. But I see Aaron Harrington just itching, rubbing his hands with glee. This is the big moment for you, Harrington.
He's got a disease.
You're diseased, Harrington?
Yeah, that's why he's itching.
Oh, my God. What have you been doing? Where have you been sleeping?
wherever I can get a roof over my head for the night. No, I mean, I have a place. Okay, so the deal with Khamzat last week, he threw it out there. He said, I think I'm done. While I didn't win a title, it's not the most important victory in this life. It may upset you, but my heart and body tell me everything. He posted this to his Instagram.
This is a problem, by the way. I'll cut in for a second. There's a problem with these religious guys. They're fucking looking for signs in the clouds from God. It's like, dude, just be the best. Go win the title.
Or devil's avocado. It could just be the fact he's coughing up blood all the time because he accompanied this
too much
tweet
sugar
statement. It's fucking damaging to your body, bro. No, he accompanied this with a picture of what appeared to be blood splatters all over the ceramic basin of Zivosh sink. Very weird way of wording that, but Harrington, go ahead.
So essentially he threw this out there. He was, he said that the UFC had paid for him to come to Las Vegas to get the, you know, best medical care that he could while recovering from COVID-19. Dana White came out and said that, you know, it's just a little bit of frustration. He's on all kinds of, you know, prednisone and different medications to try to get
him pregnant.
Yeah. Exactly. He's on a lot of prenatal drugs. It's a whole thing. You know, it's an experimental treatment for COVID. But no, I mean, it is like he's undergoing a lot of medications here. And Dana White essentially said he's just speaking from emotion. This is not anything that's going to stick. Ramzan Kadyrov, the guy who threw him the gold-plated banquet, if you remember from a few months ago, that guy came out and said, no. Khamzat will be fighting till the end.
The ruthless dictator of Chechnya, as he's known by his other title. I don't know if he is ruthless or a dictator. He looks like a bloody good guy to me. I wish I had a ruthless dictator in my corner back in the fucking day. You know what I'm saying? That guy will make some shit happen for you. No, listen, if you're Khamzat, you are emotional. Think about it. He was booked so many times and then he was on this stratospheric rise up to the top and his name was at the forefront of everybody in mixed martial arts. He was getting booked in main events with Leon Edwards, then it was someone else and blah, 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 right? But you can't fight. You can't fight. And then you get sick and it's a lot to deal with. So I think it was an emotional response. And certainly if he's got health issues, which are causing him, you know, restricting him from training and things, then you just get pissed off one day and say, you know what, fuck this, I'm done. But I think it sounds like it was an emotional react.
It's also the problem because now, today, 2021, everyone's got you know, Instagram, Twitter, everything's on it. So you just, sometimes you need to just fucking be away from your phone for a minute and just have a conversation. You have that conversation with your wife or your girlfriend or one of your training partners. You're like, I just want to retire. But he's got his phone and he's like, you know what? Let me tweet this out. I'm going to make a moment right now. So yeah, I think that it's just sort of, people get bored. They also
that is the
little-
problem, though. You're right. Because as you say, however you're feeling, and it could be the most stupidest thing ever, something pops in your head and you think, oh, this is good. I'm going to put it out there to the world and everyone sees it. And you're like, you're fucked. Because even if you delete the tweet, some little asshole out there has taken a screenshot. They've retweeted it. It's all over the place. It's gone viral and you're fucked. And you're just waiting for the letter in the mail to tell you that you've been fired and released from your post. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, as you say. Any other world without smartphones, without Twitter, social media, whatever, he might have felt differently the next day after he slept on it.
Well, it used to be back in the day, you would have a thought, right? The 10 years ago, 15 years ago, he has that thought. It's like, I want to retire. Fuck. And then he goes and he sits in a steam room for a while and thinks about it. Then he goes and talks to his brother about it. Then he meditates on it for a day. He takes a walk up a hill somewhere. He's fucking where the desert. I don't know where, I don't know what it's like in Chechnya, but he would have time to reflect on it. But now there's no reflection period for anything. Now, as soon as you have a thought, you're like, I got to get this thought out. I need an opinion on this from my followers right now. So it's, I think as a society, as a whole, we all do that. We don't reflect on anything. There's no self, you know, meditative state. Even when you used to take a dump back in the day, you would sit there for 15 minutes and you'd think about your day and be like, how can I make myself better? Now you're taking a dump, you're on the phone the whole time. How often are you on your phone tweeting when you're taking a dump, Bisping?
I am never having a phone call on the toilet while I'm taking a dump, okay? I will be on the phone. I will be using the phone, but I'll never be on the phone. I'll be, you know, yeah, look at social media, scroll through as I'm dropping a deuce. I think everybody does that. Do you know what I mean? And to your point, you're right. We do live in a culture now where everything's immediate. You want it now. You know what I mean? So apparently he's not retired, but still, you mentioned him. You brought his name up, and it's kind of old news now, so I thought we'd get into that there.
All right, Mike, we should take a quick moment and thank Sheath Underwear for supporting today's show. Sheath makes the most comfortable underwear in the world, super stylish as well, so many different styles. I'll tell you right now, moisture-wicking technology, your balls aren't going to sweat, they're not going to stink, it keeps you super cool. Whatever the material they use, it's very stretchy, it feels really, really high quality. With Father's Day right around the corner, you're going to want to get that man in your life some Sheath Underwear.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We all need underwear. We like clean underwear. We like new underwear. Guess what? It's even better. Comfortable underwear that looks stylish. The one thing that you cannot argue with, I don't know, maybe you're going for the dual pouch technology. That's the big sales feature. That's what I like. Maybe you don't like that, but you just like clean, stylish, comfortable underwear. Well, Sheath have you covered as well. And of course, we have a fantastic deal. They have supported this show for a long, long time. So next time you go to buy some underwear, buy it from sheathunderwear.com. They're a fantastic company. They're great guys. They sponsor a lot of people in the MMA space as well. So if you call yourself a true fan, then come on, buy your underwear from sheathunderwear.com. And when you're at sheathunderwear.com, use the promo code BELIEVE20. You're going to get 20% off. You know, you all need underwear at some point. The next time that is needed, trust me, you will not buy this underwear and have a problem. You will not buy this. Go ahead.
Well, I've made the mistake in the past. I get really cheap, affordable underwear. You get 5 in a pack for 20 bucks. They're garbage. You're not saving money in the long run because the fabric gets all stretched out. They get ripped in the middle. They get worn. My Sheath underwear, I have nothing but Sheath underwear now. It's really high quality. You feel the difference. I'm a happier man when I wear my Sheath underwear.
Way happier. Are you wearing it today?
I'm wearing it right now, dog. Whoa, you know.
We're in for a great show, ladies and gentlemen. Look at that.
Oh, I always got Sheath underwear on. Are you kidding me?
Are you fucking kidding me? Look what? At this. I never stop. I never leave home without my Sheath underwear. Are you crazy? Once more, sheathunderwear.com. Code is Bisping. 20% off. Okay. 135. We mentioned it before with Dominic Cruz. We had a bit of a fiasco at the weekend, you know, with that title fight. What happened there? Oh, man, such a shame. Great fight. I was enjoying the fight. Aljamain Sterling looked sensational to start with. He went out there, pushed a really fast pace. Striking looked good, you know. A little erratic, you know. He looked a little erratic, a little, like, panicky. But
almost
still.
Too much up top, in my opinion. That first round, he came on so strong that it became very obvious that he wasn't going to be able to keep up that pace. Whereas Piotr, I mean, he was just – even keeled the whole fight. Like he was really controlling his energy output. I think you started to see that in the second and third round, the difference there. But I mean, Aljamain, if he could have kept up that pace, he would have legitimately been able to win that fight.
Yeah, but it wasn't even so much the pace, though. As you said, Piotr Jan was so composed. He was very calm. The hands were high up. The defense was perfect every time. A lot of those shots were blocked, but still, Aljamain definitely won the first round. But as the fight progressed, I mean, everybody saw it. Piotr Jan proving why he is the champion. He was looking great. So a lot of those foot trips that he used were so well-timed against a wrestler like Aljamain Sterling. I mean, they're osotogari, to use the Japanese terminolo, or kosotogari, depending, minor, major, outer reaps, minor, inner reap, minor, outer reap, you know, judo foot sweeps. Takes me back to my old school days there. But he was hitting them on a fucking top level wrestler like Aljamain Sterling. That's not an easy thing to do. That's pure timing and that's pure skill. And on top of that,
he was Piotr skill.
Whoa. Oh, yeah. Come on. That's pure skill. But the finish, was it round four?
It was round four.
So I forget the sequence, and maybe jump in and let me know. But he's on his knees at one point. And it seemed like he was on his knees for a long, long time. And he was there. And I don't know what Aljamain was doing on his knees for so long. And Piotr Jan standing there, and apparently he was conversing with his corner, asking what I do. And he said, can I hit him? And they went, yes, yes, you can. And he fucking kneed him square in the face. Harrington, over to you.
To your point, Mike, Aljamain was 1-for-17 on takedown attempts in the fight, and that seemed to be a strategy. Go for the takedown and then immediately get down, so he was a downed opponent, and Piotr could not continue to rain offense on him.
Yeah, that bit him in the ass a little bit. I mean, in a way, look, he won the fight, but it still bit him in the ass because now people are, you know, obviously we'll talk about the aftermath in a minute, but, you know, people aren't, you know, respecting it as a true win, and he isn't either. I mean, you saw he laid the belt down in the ring afterwards, and he doesn't want to win that way, and he truly doesn't. I saw a lot of people giving him shit, and they were like, oh, he's acting. No, doggy. That knee was crazy. That the fact that they were even debating keeping the fight going was, even if Aljo wanted to continue, they shouldn't have, because he was legitimately concussed. That was a legitimate hard knee right to the jaw. And, you know, I don't know. Look, it's a shame for the title to switch hands that way. I don't even know if that should be the rule. I didn't, when it was happening, I asked Harrington, I was like, does he get the title from that? Apparently, you know, he did. I don't think that Piotr Jan, who's winning the fight, for all intents and purposes, winning the fight at that point, he had taken over. He was taking him down essentially at will. He was not, you know, he's supposed to be not as strong of a grappler. He was taking over the fight. He wasn't doing it to be malicious. He wasn't doing it to try to get a cheap shot in. It was a miscalculation. It was a fuck up.
Well, he spoke to the corner. Yeah, apparently so. I mean, I don't speak Russian, and apparently Khabib translated and told DC and Joe Rogan, said, no. He was speaking to his corner. So he kind of got bad advice there. And that's a shame. But the reality is, the situation is, he did throw the knee. Okay. So the aftermath of that is, you know, I mean, listen, nobody wants to win the belt like that, as you said. And Aljamain didn't want to. I saw somebody poking fun at him, saying he didn't want to win the belt. And then I saw a picture of him in his apartment or the hotel, the whole team, and he's got the belt over his shoulder.
Piotr tweeted that out.
Oh, yeah, Piotr, yeah. He's like, but look at you celebrating now. Listen, however way it happens, the fact is he is the champion of the world. So you are going to be happy. But the situation is, he threw the knee, right? Everybody watching this, everybody commenting, everybody judging Aljamain, you got to ask yourself this, right? At the end of the day, that knee should not have been thrown, right? Let's say he was as hurt as he was. You know, he looked very much out of it. He fell on the floor a few times. He looked wide-eyed and things, you know. That shouldn't have been thrown. It was thrown. It did land. It was illegal. It was against the rules. And had he got up and continued fighting, he would have been a diminished version of himself. So it takes tremendous fucking courage, if you're Aljamain Sterling, to say, no, I'm fine. The knee never hurt that much. Let's continue. I'm not saying I would have done that. I'm not saying I wouldn't have done that. I don't know what I would have done in that situation. What I'm saying is that people need to have a little bit more understanding for Al's situation, because at that moment in time, he probably was a diminished version of himself going forward.
Without a doubt.
Of course, it's a shitty situation, right? But it's not Al's fault that Piotr threw that knee. He is not responsible for that decision. That is not him that caused this situation. And I think had it been in round three, they would have gone to the scorecards, I think. And I think after round four, it's just an instant disqualification. I'm not sure about that. I might be wrong, but there is something to that, what I just said there. But still, I mean, at the end of the day, they're going to do a rematch. That's the only thing they can do is an instant rematch, and hopefully pretty quick. It'll make the rematch even bigger. But I did feel for Piotr Jan as well. I felt sorry for Aljamain because it fucking sucks. And that's why he was emotional afterwards. Imagine that. You go out there, you work your ass off, you make all those sacrifices, and then the fight starts going, you know, against you. Even though we started off great, there was still a lot of the fight left to play out. Who knows? Maybe he would have turned it around for the second half of round four and round five and wiped him out. Maybe he would have got a finish. So it's really unfair to both of them, really, but it fucking sucks.
Yeah, it's I guess there's no other way to do it. I would say, like, okay, well, technically they can call it a no contest and no title change hands. But in that case, if you're the champion and you're losing, why wouldn't you just throw in a legal shot to keep your title, you know? Which is, you know, has no honor. But at the same time, look, it's a fucking smarter business move. It just sucks. The whole thing sort of sucks. You know, for Jan, I feel bad for both of them. I really feel bad for Piotr Jan because he was winning the fight. Let's get real. All he had to do was not throw that illegal strike, and he would have probably continued to win that fight. You know, maybe Aljo would have come back. But it is sort of a situation where, you know, Aljo doesn't feel like he's really the champion. Piotr Jan loses his title off of bad advice off his corner. It just isn't the ideal scenario. You know, you want to see sort of a definitive finish. And Aljamain Sterling, I mean, look, good for Aljo, though. To be honest with you, good for him. He gets to taste the title now. You know, he gets to taste what it's like for the championship life. And maybe that's what will bring him to the next level. But I think Jan really passed the test at the very least. Forget the illegal knee. Forget everything else. I think it was a question, the caliber of competition that Piotr Jan had faced leading up to that fight. I think he really showed that he's truly elite by how well he was able to handle the onslaught in the beginning from Aljamain Sterling and take over the fight in the later rounds.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, it's Piotr Jan's fault, but it kind of wasn't because his corner gave him shitty advice. But the fact of the matter is, Harvard is here in the chat saying, happened in Musasi versus Weidman. Okay, maybe it did and you're right, but I'll upgrade that. It happened in Anthony Smith versus John Jones. Remember that?
No, what he was saying was that if it was, if you read earlier, he said it was deemed intentional.
I know. But against Anthony Smith versus John Jones, remembering that situation, he got an illegal knee. I think it was round four again as well. And had he just have stayed down, then Anthony Smith would have become the champion of the world. But Anthony Smith didn't do that, you know. And listen, horses for courses. You can't blame Aljamain for doing that. As I say, he would have been diminished. And it's funny because Harrington just put there in the notes, he's already calling for a fight with Henry Cejudo as opposed to a fight with Piotr Jan. That ain't going to happen. I can't imagine that's going to happen. I think that fight has to finish of its own accord. There has to be an immediate rematch. I mean, of course, for Aljamain, you want to move on with your life and you want to start fighting other people, maybe a big fight with Cejudo. But that fight ended under very bizarre circumstances. Of course, it was Piotr Jan that did it. And you could make the argument, if you're Aljamain Sterling, well, hold on, why would I reward him with the ability to win my belt back? He cheated. I didn't. He fucked it up. Therefore, he has to sacrifice and forfeit his belt. That's one way of looking at it. But the other way, and if I'm the UFC, I say, nah, fuck that. This fight has to finish by its own natural causes. And we'll see who's the champ at the end of it. Anyway.
Cheating is a harsh way to put it, right? Because I feel like when you say cheating, it implies that there was like an intentional thing. And I know they're calling it an intentional foul. In fact, they actually literally the actual judging called it an intentional foul, but I don't look at it as being intentional.
It was intentional. It was intentional. Listen, the parameters surrounding it on whether or not he at that moment was intentionally fouling, he threw the knee. That's not up for debate. He intentionally threw that knee. He didn't accidentally throw that knee. He didn't look over there. And then when you look over there, the side effects of that is that the knee goes up. No, he looked at fucking Aljamain Sterling. He said, look at you on your knees there, you little motherfucker. Guess what?
Happy International Women's Day. Boom.
Get fucking ready. Boom. Ooh, you like that shit? You fucking like that shit, Aljamain? That's what happened. It wasn't an accident. He did not accidentally knee him in the face.
It was not an accident, but it wasn't. I don't look at it as Piotr Jan trying to take advantage of a downed opponent. It was getting the it's almost like his emotions got the best of him in that moment.
Is not a defense.
Yeah.
You cannot go in court and say, I'm sorry, I didn't know that by blowing a man's brain off out head off with a gun that would kill him. I'm sorry, but I didn't realize that.
I will say, all right, so look, you bring up that example. There is, you know, first degree murder, second degree murder, third degree murder. This was a third degree foul. This
I'd say manslaughter, okay? This manslaughter. Is a manslaughter issue, okay?
Right, but it wasn't like he was like, I'm going to go fucking get this guy while he's standing. He was already winning the fight. Like,
but he threw the knee. He threw the knee. You can't deny that he threw the knee.
Aljo was playing a different game. Aljo's playing the MMA game, so he's got his knee down. He's not defending it because he doesn't need to, right? So
And you bring up another good point there. Aljamain was down there for far too long. I don't know what Aljamain was doing on his fucking knees, right, playing that game. I'd have to watch it back again and count how many seconds and see the full scenario. But I think I looked away, and then when I looked back, Aljamain was on his knees, right? And if you want to break it down and kind of be a little harsh to Aljamain, I guess this is, in a real fighting scenario, you're not going to be in that position. You are not going to be on that. And of course, in this situation, he knows that he's protected by the rules where you can't be kneed in the face. Well, in a real combat situation, that wouldn't happen. And this is supposed to be as real as it gets, as close to it gets. However, that said, rules are there for a reason. They have to be followed. So,
well, see guys, I've seen this happen before. I'm trying to remember the actual fights, but you'll see people play that game, right? Well, they'll put a hand down, they'll put one of their points down, then pick it up, put it down, pick it up. And they're not fighting in that moment. They're playing the MMA game, you know, and Aljamain in that moment wasn't fighting. He was sort of playing the MMA game and saying, all right, let me take a little breather here. Let me take advantage of the rules. But that's not wrong. He is following the rules. So it's not a knock on Aljamain at all. The whole thing is just sort of a mess. The only thing to do is run it back immediately. You have to run it back. Nobody is happy with the result. Peter Yan's not happy with the result. Aljamain Sterling's not happy with the result. The fans aren't happy with the results. But if I'm Aljo, I do understand.
He's a little happy.
He's happier than he would have been had he not got felled.
If he got fucking knocked out in the fifth round and went home with half of his paycheck and definitely no rematch and definitely no world title fight and no defenses going forward, he would not be in as good a mood as he is today. Today, Aljamain Sterling is the champion of the world, and he has a lucrative rematch with Piotr Jan on his hands, right? And without anything else, he can always say, I became the champion of the world in the UFC, regardless of the circumstances. That will forever be in the history books. And it's quite the achievement, regardless of how it happens. So, listen.
I tweeted out... I think I said it was just the meme of Leonardo DiCaprio, you know, giving the cheers. And yep. I was like, Matt Hamill right now, because Matt Hamill got the win over John Jones by getting knocked out. So,
Yeah. No, I get it. Yeah. All right. Let's move on to this one then. Amanda Nunes. Holy shit. I mean, I don't think anyone really gave Megan Anderson a chance of winning that fight. And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way to Megan Anderson. Solid fighter, good skills, big for the division, all that stuff. The problem is you're talking about Amanda goddamn Nunes, who was just a wrecking machine. And she went out there. And that's all kind of how I saw the fight happening. But I mean, I knew it would be dominant. I thought maybe Megan would land a shot. But literally, I think, to be honest, the whole moment got the better of her. You know, I think that's what happened there. Because I think when you walked out, I mean, she's a very pale girl as it is, but she looked like she'd seen a ghost. You know what I mean? You could see her body language. She wasn't having a good time. She wasn't in the moment. She was definitely like, whoa, hold on. I'm going in there with the best pound-for-pound fighter. Maybe I'm wrong, but I'm just saying that's what it looked like to me. And that's kind of how she fought. She was very hesitant, you know. And Amanda Nunes, this is just another walk in the park for her. It's just another day in the office, just another long line. The latest contender, you know, and she fucking, from that first punch, that overhand right, I mean, Megan did well to stay on her feet, but only just, and then, yeah, I mean, there's no point breaking it down. There's no point fucking breaking it down. It's just, let's just say, Amanda Nunes is great, and unfortunately, we knew Megan Anderson is not the champion now, but that's not news to anybody.
Yeah, I mean, it was so dominant, you know, at this point, what do you do? I mean, Nunes, there's nobody at 145 left at all. Like, there's just nobody there. Nobody could challenge her at 145. At 135, there's really not anybody either. She's almost like a victim of her own success. She's so good that it makes it so that there's not very many interesting matchups. It reminds me of Anderson Silva back in the day. Remember when Anderson cleaned out, like, everybody? You know, what else can she do? How do we come up with new challengers without there being sort of competition at the top? Yeah. You know, she seems to be truly head and shoulders above everybody else. So it's a weird situation. She's almost too good.
Oh, absolutely. That is the problem. That is the issue. She's cleared everybody out. And then what are you going to do? Just keep going around in circles. The same girls, you know, they win 2-3, then they get another title shot.
And then Shevchenko, you know, they kind of ruin Shevchenko's credibility because she keeps on losing to Amanda Nunes. It's a problem.
Well, yeah, but those fights with Shevchenko were close. The second one was even closer than the first. However, that said, Nunes clearly won them both. And she's the bigger girl. I don't think Shevchenko ever beats Amanda Nunes. You know, not when everything's all equal. You know, they both have good training camps. They both have the equal amount of time of preparation. Nunes is the bigger person. Anytime two people are equally skilled, the bigger person will win. You know, that's why they have weight classes. However, this will never happen. I'd love to see a fight a guy. That's call me a sadist. Call me a sick bastard.
Happy International Women's Day, Bisping.
Happy International Women's Day. You know, Amanda Nunes. Jesus, I don't want to see a fight in another woman. I want to see what she can do against a guy. Saturday night, buddy of mine, Aaron from Playline, we're going back and forth. He texts me, he said, do you think Callum? He says, ask Callum if he thinks he could beat Amanda Nunes. And that obviously provided some hilarity. So I'll ask you, Lewis. I'll ask you. Could you beat Amanda Nunes in a mixed martial arts contest?
No. Are you out of your fucking mind? I mean, look. I mean, she will punch as hard as most dudes with way more technique. I think she's a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt as well. There's no opportunity at all for a guy that isn't a professional mixed martial artist. Now, I will say that any man on the UFC roster down to 125 pounds will beat Amanda Nunes in a mixed martial arts fight. I'm sorry.
I don't know about that. I don't. I'm serious. I'm not talking championship fodder. I'm not talking top five, top 10, because men are just, listen, and it's International Women's Day, so I don't want to talk shit, but the reality is we're built stronger. We've got a thicker bone density. We have thicker skulls. We're just stronger and bigger and not better, but it depends which you know side of the argument you're on. Maybe we are, maybe we're not, maybe we're all equals. How about that? But we're definitely bigger and stronger, and that's just a fact. However, with that said, I believe her skill and ferocity can make up for some of that. And I feel like some of the fringe guys around the 15 mark, you know, 16, 17, ooh, I reckon they could fucking get a taste of Amanda.
Harrington, pull up some 125-pounders.
Don't do it, because that's what I was going to do. I'm not sitting here and berating another man, right, who's on the roster. All right, I'm not doing that. I'm not putting my name to that. It's disrespectful. I will say, I do think some of the lower-level guys Amanda could take, for sure.
I mean, look, you know better than me. All right, so this comes from... You've actually sparred with women to a certain degree, right? Not like really. You haven't gone hard.
No, I've tiptoed around. I've let Chris Cyborg beat the shit out of me. By the way, I did that for fun. Right? I was sending Vin Diesel a birthday message. We got asked by his sister. He was a little, you know, we went to his birthday party and they were doing like a thing on the screen. Wants everyone to send, you know, a little thank you, whatever. And they'll play the compilation, the montage. Okay. And so, yeah, so I thought I'll make it funny. You know what I mean? So I had Cyborg beating the fuck out of me, right? But it was a joke. It was set up.
And at any given moment, could you have turned it on and just taken
Cyborg? Oh, 100%. Well, don't mix with me like that. I was letting her tee off of me. That was the joke. Do you know what I mean? I'm like, Jesus Christ, Cyborg, leave me alone, you know? But,
I mean, did you see anything in sparring with Cyborg that made you think that Cyborg could beat some smaller guys in
That was the only time I did it, because I never wanted to spar with girls. When I'm training for a fight, I did it. Call it male chauvinistic or whatever you want to call it. But when I used to be sparring, I always wanted the toughest challenges. And that's what you want. You want the toughest challenges. And you know, some of the girls in the gym were not providing that. So I would avoid them like the goddamn plague. Like the plague.
There's no upside in beating a woman in sparring in the gym.
No. Well,
for you.
And I'm not, you know, again, because you can't use your power. You can't really exert yourself properly. You can't,
right.
You know, I'm trying to get a workout in as well. I'm trying to work my cardiovascular system. I'm trying to work my skill set. I'm trying to get experience. I'm trying to work on certain things. When you're sparring with a lady, right? And who knows, you know, anyone in general, yeah, of course that all has to calm down a little bit because you can't be a prick in the training room. Oh, come right. here. Boom. Right hand, left head kick, spark them out. Well, you know what I'm saying?
You want it to be a fucking fighter.
Hey, you wanted to spar? Sorry, that's how it is. You'd just be a total dickhead with that kind of behavior. You know what I'm saying? So you do have to tone it down. So yeah. Whenever I was training for a fight, I always avoided them. And that's not because I don't respect them or appreciate what they bring to the table. It's that I am a psycho and I want to go 100% balls to the wall. And I'm looking to knock some motherfuckers out today. Okay? Right. And it ain't going to be you, Deirdre. Yeah.
That it makes sense. I'm blindly saying this. I'm just assuming that any guy that's UFC caliber, even on the lower end of the spectrum, that they would be able to handle themselves against most women in the world. And that's not sexist. That's just a fact. I don't know what else to say here. We're tiptoeing around this because International Women's Day. It's fucking crazy.
I'm going in fucking balls deep. Let's go. Right. With both testicles on the International Women's Day. No, I agree. But it's fun to talk about. It's fun to imagine, you know.
All right. I'd love to see the challenge.
You guys can say this. You guys can say, give me a name. Give me a name of a male fighter in the UFC that you think Nunes could be. I think there's a lot.
Harrington's got a few on his mind. I just don't think it's going to happen. I think any guy would fucking head kick her to death. Any guy in the UFC roster.
All right. I mean, we just saw him. We just saw him this weekend, Michael. How do you think a fight between Amanda Nunes and Tim Elliott goes?
Do you know, it's funny because I was thinking about Tim Elliott as well, but he's a scrappy little, I don't know how to describe him, but he's a little ball of energy. He's like the Tasmanian devil. That's a bad fight. That's a bad one for Amanda, and he's 125. But still, I said I don't want to do this, and we can't just pick names out of a hat and then talk shit about him. Nunes is fantastic. She's great. Oh, how cute was that with the baby in the octagon? Oh, bless. You know what I mean? I wasn't too sure about the germs. You know what I mean? Young baby, little immune system, maybe keep away from the mother until she's had a shower or whatever, but still, absolutely fucking
I don't think she broke a sweat, to be honest with you.
Yeah, that's a good point. She didn't. I don't think. What was the finish?
The finish was
an arm bar. It was like an inverted triangle from behind from the back take, but that's not how she got there. And then it was like an arm bar as well, I believe. Am I correct in that, Harrington?
It was the arm in triangle, if I'm not mistaken. I'm going to look up the exact timing right now.
And her coach says she's knocking out dudes in training. And I believe that she's knocking out dudes in training, but I don't believe she's knocking out UFC fighters in training.
I reckon she'd knock you out in training, Lewis.
I'm not a UFC fighter.
I know, but I'm just saying, regardless, you are Lewis.
I reckon she would too. I believe that she would knock me out in training, 100%.
Wouldn't knock Callum out in training.
You don't think so?
Never in a fucking million years.
You have a lot of fucking faith in Callum.
Because I train with him. I work out with him. I know what he can do. I know what I can do. And no disrespect, just throwing it out there. Surprise, surprise, Amanda Nunes is not going to knock me out. And Callum gives me fucking, trust me. So I'm just saying that based on that math, Amanda, the lioness, is not knocking out my son. Call me what you will.
Call you a proud dad.
Call me a proud dad. Call me whatever. Okay. Well done to Amanda Nunes. Commiserations, Megan Anderson. Great fight.
What do you think the solution is here for Amanda Nunes? Because there's got to be something. Something's got to give. I mean, does she have to vacate, step away for a little while, come back when we have some more cleared competitors? Or is she the only person that's defending both belts right now? That's a champ that defends both?
Yeah, she is. She's by far the only person that's done that. And to be honest, the competition at 145 isn't there, right? So she doesn't need that strength of schedule. So this allows her, you know, like if you're a champ at 170 or 185 or 50, you know, like DC, 205 and heavyweight, right? That's a lot, right? Because there's a lot of contenders at heavyweight, a lot of contenders at 205, and you have an obligation as a champ to defend those belts. Nunes is in a situation where she can do this and still hold on to the belts without causing a backlog in the division. Because at 145, the competition just isn't there. 135, there is. So she can go back down to 135, do that stuff. And then every now and again, maybe once a year, once every 18 months, whatever, a challenger will emerge at 145. I know at 135, what's her name? Oh, God, mine's gone blank. Harrington, who's she talking about fighting at the weekend? What's her name? She's Juliana from the Venezuelan, yeah, Juliana Pena, the Venezuelan vixen. Yeah, yeah. So that's looking like a defense at 135 next. Yeah, I mean, Clarissa Shields, but she's straight up just boxing. She's talking about coming over to MMA. That would be interesting. But Nunes is just going to take it down. You know, that's what you do if you fight a boxer. We've been through this a million times. Anyway, all right, leave that there. Congrats, Nunes, once again. Just an incredible, very, very inspirational male or female to see what she's doing. And I was talking to my neighbor, as I said, he's Brazilian. He was talking about where Nunes is from when they announced it. He said, oh, it's a very, you know, it's a very, very poor net part of Brazil. And I'm like, well, she ain't fucking poor now. That's a fact. You know what I mean? Defending two belts, she's earning a lot of money and she deserves every single penny. So good for her.
Good for her. Yeah, I'm a fan. And she should be in the conversation about pound for pound. And I think she's sort of left out of that conversation a lot.
I'd be surprised if she is left out. She has to be there regardless.
She's the only one defending two titles in two different weight classes and in such a dominant fashion.
Yeah, she's the champion of two weight classes. I'd be very, very surprised if she's not top five. She has to be.
All right, Mike, real quick, we must thank Hemp Fusion for supporting today's show. Hemp Fusion makes incredible high-quality CBD products, including their incredible sleep aid. I'll tell you right now, if you don't know what CBD can do for you, do a little research. It's known to help everything from anxiety to physical pain, inflammation, but it could also help you get to sleep.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Lewis. Listen, I think everybody's heard about CBD these days. At this stage, pardon me, you know, it helps with inflammation, it helps with anxiety, insomnia, a bunch of different stuff. And as you're talking about there, the Hemp Fusion CBD Sleep Support is absolutely fantastic. It blends 10 milligrams of CBD, terpenes, omegas, and GABA with black pepper and clove oil. Together, they unleash the entourage effect, working together to deliver powerful benefits to equal well-rounded sleep. And we all know how valuable a good night's sleep is. And I'm telling you, this stuff is absolutely fantastic. I've used some other products in the past, but when you wake up in the morning, you're kind of groggy, you have a few coffees and you still feel like shit. With the sleep support from Hemp Fusion, you get off to sleep straight away and you feel fantastic in the morning. But of course, that's not the only products that they have. If you go to the hempfusion.com website, a bunch of different CBD and wellness products. They got CBD if you're a stressy bastard like myself, blended with ashwagandha. They got a strain that gives you energy as well, Lewis.
Ooh, I love having energy. And believe me, I'll tell you right now, I stopped smoking weed a little while ago, so my anxiety is through the roof. I take a little bit of CBD in the morning and it sets me straight for the entire day. And we actually give you a pretty incredible discount. Try out any of their products, including their sleep support.
Yeah, no, absolutely. The sleep support, the stress, but they also got a bunch of wellness products as well on the website. So this code, what we're giving you, 25% off, baby boy, can do you a lot of good. Go to hempfusion.com, check out all of their products. And remember, when you go there and you check out, use the code COUNT, 25% off. We're not done yet. Free shipping as well. Free shipping, 25% off when you use the code COUNT. And yeah, there you go. Good luck. Where were we? Anyway, Jan Blachowicz. Jan Blachowicz and taking on Israel Adesanya. You know what? Last week, by the way, quick update. We talked about this parlay that I was on. Remember? And I was watching it. And the first fight on the prelims that came in, Rakic won that came in. There was something else. I'm like, oh, this is getting fucking interesting. And then Piotr Jan had to win in any way, shape, or form. And as the fight was going on, not that I was rooting against Aljamain, but I kind of was, I guess. But then Piotr Jan knees him in the fucking face, and that was it. And Jan and Izzy went over 2.5 rounds, $43,000. But we needed Nunes to win in the third round. Of course, he's wrong. So it's not all Piotr's fault, but I got to say, parlays are a lot of fun.
Yeah, they are. I mean, it really does make you sit on the edge of your seat a little bit. And I mean, look, give Jan Blachowicz all the credit in the fucking world. He came in and just beat him. It wasn't like, and also not for nothing, I'm not shitting on the commentating team at all. But what was going on? Were you listening to the commentators? Did you have the volume on?
Because
they
were
sucking Izzy's dick the whole time. What fight were they watching? I feel like Jan was winning almost the whole time. I mean, I guess it was the early rounds. It was up for debate, but Jan was landing the bigger shots. He was walking him down. I felt like it was all Jan's fight almost the whole time. I guess I'm confusing the round, so I don't want to confuse round one and round two. But by round three, I tweeted, I was like, Jan's winning this fight. And people were calling me an idiot. They're like, dude, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Izzy's killing him. What did you think?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I had Jan, for the most part, winning. I didn't keep a scorecard at the time, but I had him winning nearly every round. They were close rounds, and I thought, obviously, the size came into it, and the takedowns came in later on in the fight. Mm. Jan essentially beat him in his own game. He did. He used a lot of feints. He used a lot, you know, they were talking about Izzy's feints and how Jan was biting on all those feints. But you have to. That's why you throw them. You know what I mean? You can't ignore the feint, because if you ignore the feint, you're allowing the feint to do its job, right? A feint is to get you to bite, to get to react. Because you do that, you don't react, right? And the next hand they go boom like that, and they just punch you. They start that. But you're not going to react because you don't want to react to the feint. It's like, well, fuck it. I'd rather react to all the fucking feints than take a punch to the face.
I'm looking at him. I was like, he's got great reflexes. Good for him.
fuck you, dickhead. You know, that's no problem. His striking was good. He was very fast. I mean, listen, Izzy was good as well. It was a technical battle. But Jan was landing, I think, the cleaner shots. He was landing the cleaner shots that kind of stole the moments. Izzy, you know, it was a close fight. It was a close fight, but it's one that Jan was in control of, you know. When he got him down in round four and five, though, good takedowns, by the way, as well. I would have liked to have seen more offense from Jan on the ground because Izzy's guard was kind of wide open, you know what I mean? Mm. When he was on the ground, a lot of the time his legs weren't even crossed. His legs weren't even crossed, and I'm not insulting the guy. That's just an observation. That's what I saw. The legs weren't crossed. The legs have to be closed, the half guard or the full guard. Otherwise, you're just going to pass. So Jan could have passed a lot faster.
DC addressed that a couple times where he was talking about how being in half guard was a better position for Jan to be in than mount or even side control.
He didn't finish the fight, did he? Do you know what I mean? And you can finish the fight from mount a lot quicker. Yeah, it is. Half guard's a good position to control an opponent. I used to like doing ground and pound from there, because once you pass, you've got less anchors on your opponent. If you're just inside control, you know, they can get full guard back quite easily. They can, you know, there's a lot of stuff they can do. Mount, again, they can turn, they can get the guard back, stuff like that. The beauty of being in mount, though, is that you can deliver fight, put ending blows. From side control, of course, you've got submission attempts. You know, you've got Kimuras and things like that. A bunch of stuff you can do. You've also got elbows, and you can punch. But the punch is the angle that you're on. If you're trying to keep the downward pressure on your opponent, they're just little arm punches. You know what I mean? They're not devastating blows. Of course, you can elbow. Elbows cause cuts. They obviously hurt more as well because it's bone on face. But if you get to mount, you can posture up and fucking go for it and really bring down ridiculously powerful shots. But still, listen, Jan Blachowicz won that fight fair and square.
I think, Jan probably at that point knew he was winning the fight, or felt like he was winning the fight on the scorecard. So he was like, why risk it? Why risk, you know, being put into a situation where there's a scramble where Izzy can get back up? When you look at the fight metrics, Jan was beating him by strikes. And I believe every round he landed more. I just felt like the commentating team wasn't really giving Jan as much love as they were giving Izzy. They seemed to be more impressed with Izzy. And I was like, what fight are we even watching here? I was so impressed with Blachowicz's ability to beat him to the punch, land the cleaner strikes. Good good for him, dude. Once again, we talked about it on the show. It's just the type of fighter that I'm rooting for. It's a guy who he had to come up the hard way. He had a bunch of rough losses in the UFC to win the title. You know, he has, and to be honest with you, I know it sort of has to bug you when everyone's saying, well, you never beat John Jones. Look, they were talking about Izzy like he's the next John Jones, and he's the first guy to deliver that loss to Israel Adesanya, which has to feel extra good for Jan Blachowicz.
Yeah, listen, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, for Daniel Cormier, he had it as well against John Jones, and now, of course, Jan Blachowicz kind of gets it. You know, it's a little different because Jones was suspended when DC became the champ. Now, for Jan, John's gone. He's moved on from the division. So it's not really fair, but I understand that ghost, the shadow of John Jones is always there at 205. But listen, he just beat Israel Adesanya. The guy was 20-0, had a lot of good wins. You know, that solidified him as a champion. You know, I did have concerns for him going into this fight. I thought it was a very close fight. It was a very tough fight to pick. And but I know Jan said afterwards, he said, I expected him to be a lot quicker. He expected him to be a lot quicker, which was surprising. But yeah, good technical fight. Good technical fight. Takedowns were all the difference. That's why you're going to be well-rounded. I just think for a lot of people at 185 now, you know, but listen, everybody knows Israel's a good striker and he's a kickboxer and therefore a weakness in the grappling. And he hasn't really shown that in the past. His takedown defense has been very, very good. I do feel that he did show a little, you know, he needs to do some more work on the ground from what I saw. So there's a potential path there for people, you know, in the middleweight division to beat Izzy in the future.
Yeah, you lose the air of invincibility, right? Especially when he didn't like get caught. He didn't like lose like no, he was beaten. He was sort of beaten at his own game. And then what Jan was able to take over and implement his game plan toward the end of the fight and really, really take over. So I'm assuming people watching that now at 185 are going, oh, fuck that. I could beat Izzy. There's got to be a lot of people watching that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And to your point before, it's, you know, you said, oh, the era, the feeling of invincibility has disappeared. Not really, right? Because he went up to 205, right? He got beaten by decision. It was against the champion of the world. So therefore, there's still a lot of positives for Izzy there. There's still a lot of ways that you can dissect this. You can still be honest with yourself, not be in denial. I mean, still, rightly so, have that confidence. Say, listen, no, in my weight class, I'm the fucking man. Look what I did. I went up, I chased greatness. I dared to be great. I went up to another weight class. And that's what I always say. That's why it's always so beneficial for these guys when you're going up, because you've literally got nothing to lose. Because if you do, well, I tried to do it, didn't I? I should stick to my own weight class. And if you do it, you're a fucking legend. You know what I mean? So for Izzy, he's still got a way, and he should. He should say, no, at my weight class, I am still the man. I am the undisputed champion of the world, right? And if I do go up to 205 again in the future, maybe I try and put some weight on. Maybe I have another approach. But I don't think that hurts Izzy's stock at all in the UFC. I don't think it hurts his star power. I think a lot of people would look at him and think, wow, they respect what he tried to do. And he's still got a fantastic career ahead of him as well.
I mean, I disagree that it doesn't hurt a stock. It does hurt a stock a little bit. When you lose, and you lose the way you... And look, Jan is incredible, right? And I think we're just realizing how good Jan Blachowicz is now. But it's not like he lost to John Jones, who's considered the greatest of all time. He lost to Jan Blachowicz, who a lot of people were sort of looking past. He was looking past. He was talking about the John Jones fight. He's talking about moving up to heavyweight to chase John Jones. So... just true stock, like, yeah, he's not undefeated anymore. He's got one loss on his record. It's not a John Jones loss where he got screwed out of it by a downward elbow. He truly got beaten by a guy who most people thought he was going to be able to beat. So I think the casual fan doesn't even know the difference between the weight classes. The casual fan just goes, oh shit, he just lost. They're not going like the hardcore says yes, he moved up. The hardcore fan understands how good Jan Blachowicz is. But I think the average person looking at this, you know, he's going to have to do a lot to erase that loss. And he lost in, it was like a bad way to lose. When you get beaten at your own game, you get beaten to the punch, and then you get taken down toward the later part of the fight. You look like you're sort of lost on the ground. It wasn't ideal for Israel Adesanya. And I'm not saying that Israel Adesanya isn't going to achieve that sort of greatness that John Jones achieved, but this is definitely a big bump in the road.
I don't necessarily disagree with what you're saying. I'm just saying in terms of his trajectory as a star and his earning potential and all the rest of it, it isn't affected. Of course, it's always sexy. You know, Dana White himself, you know, he said it, you know, about John Jones and that stupid loss that he has on there. As a promoter, of course you want that undefeated because it's special. You know, that's why you protect it. That's why I always talk about if you're an amateur fighter, get as much fights as an amateur, as many fights as an amateur as you can. People are always quick to rush to the professional leagues, of course, because you get paid for it. But you don't want to learn on the job as a pro, because if you get fucking beat, that one or that whatever the number is, it's on there for life. It doesn't go anywhere. So you're right. It is sexy. But ultimately, he's still got a lot to be very, very positive about.
Well, luckily, mixed martial arts is a sport where, you know, being undefeated is very rare, right? We got Khabib. Like, it's a rare thing. You don't get to see it's not like Mayweather. I think a lot we're used to combat sports where in boxing, you have a lot of guys that are undefeated. They come up, you hear about this guy going against this guy. They're both undefeated. They both have world titles. In mixed martial arts, there are so many ways to lose. And you look at the biggest guys with the biggest earning potential, a Conor McGregor, a Nate Diaz, a Nick Diaz. These guys all have losses on their records, and it didn't really affect their earning potential. I mean, Conor wasn't undefeated when he became champion, and he was still able to become the biggest star in the world. So you're right. I don't think that his earning potential has necessarily been impeded that much. You know, all it takes is a fucking slick countdown show and a UFC package, and then everyone's right back there again. But overall, you know, I think that it's a big bump in the road. The trajectory for Israel Adesanya was supposed to be undefeated, come in, win both titles, champ, champ, chase John Jones, champ, champ, champ. I mean,
well, exactly. No. Yeah. And that, from that perspective, you're absolutely right. That's all dead in the water. That's done. That's why John Jones came out here as well. He put a tweet on at the weekend, if you got that, Harrington. He said, I forget what he said, but he was like, are you fucking serious? Don't waste my time or something like that. And I got to be honest, you know, looking at the way John Jones has fought people like that, I kind of see his point. And you're right, all that the super fight with John Jones, the champ stuff and all this stuff, and maybe being a star so big that transcends the sport, that is gone, that is over now. It doesn't mean it won't happen again in the future. Doesn't mean that Israel can't go on a 5-fight undefeated streak as the champion and then say, fuck this, I'm gonna do this again, I'm gonna give it a shot, I know what I did wrong, but it's dead for now. It is over for now.
And it was close enough that if he did go on a streak and wanted to move up again at 205, and he cleared up the division at 185, he's clearly the guy. I wouldn't be opposed to a Jan Blachowicz rematch, or if Jan loses that title, having another title shot down the line, why not? You know, but it definitely, he has to do some work, obviously, in order to get himself there. I'll tell you right now, watching what Jan did, I mean, John would have fucking decapitated Israel Adesanya. John Jones. Jan versus John Jones, I think it would be an incredible fight. And I think Blachowicz showed in the Israel Adesanya fight how good he is. I think that, you know, people really underestimated his striking. They thought he was going to have to get it to the ground early in order to win that fight. But I look at the style that John Jones has, which is, you know, I mean, crazy high-level grappling, really great wrestler, big, massive guy. You know, really genuinely outsizes Izzy. He's taller than Izzy. He's maybe the same height. They're both 6'4".
I'm not sure what Jones is, but yeah, 6'4". They're about the same height. The difference is that this is what not only caused Izzy to lose at the weekend, but in round 4 and 5, Jan got the takedown. And then once he got the takedown, he held him there for the remainder of the round. That's huge. In the past, when people have tried to take them down, and that's why I always say, right, when you're against the fence, it's so beneficial. Those takedowns that happened for Jan, they were kind of out in the open, right? And Izzy was blindsided by the fight. Said, hold on a minute, there's no wrestling here. This is a striking fight. This is essentially a kickboxing fight with 4 ounce gloves. And then when he shocked him with a takedown, it was successful. And the reason he kept him there, because it was, again, out in the open of the octagon. If you're against the fence, and you drill, right? And you see it in the countdown show, you saw it in the preparation, drilling and drilling and drilling. But where is he drilling? He's drilling with the fence behind him. He's drilling with a wall behind him. And trust me, getting up with a wall or something to lean on is so much easier than doing it out in the open. I've said it before, but I'll say it again, because as you start building up and getting to your feet, all they're going to do is drive into you. And then with gravity, you fucking topple over, you go down again. Simple as that. So, you know, that's what you got to do with Izzy. If I'm fighting him at middleweight, I'm trying to draw him out, get him to come forward and try to take him down in the open. Again, easier said than done. Glover Teixeira waiting in the wings for Jan Blachowicz. That's a sensational fight. I don't think Jan has any injuries per se. So hopefully we get to see that pretty quick, because Glover Teixeira is not getting any younger. But I tell you what, Glover is a fucking animal. And that's a really, really tough fight for Jan Blachowicz, but one that I can't wait to see.
Yeah, that's very exciting. And I'm really happy for Jan. He was such a nice guy when we had him on the show. It's nice, because it felt kind of fucked up. They're like, God damn it, dude, he just won the title. And now they're going to have a guy at middleweight come up and fight for that title. If he lost it, it would have just been such a shame. And we said this last week on the show. It's like, Izzy still has a lot of potential to become, I mean, a massive, he's already a massive star.
He's still the middleweight champion of the world. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Right? That's why. As a human element for, listen, Izzy's got a lot going for him, right? We got the same manager, Oriatar, Paradigm Sports Management, right? And when he has a guy, someone like Conor McGregor, of course, look what he did for Conor. Israel Adesanya, there's a lot of deals to be done. There's a lot of business to be done, a lot of money to be made. Do you know what I mean? And his stock is still there. He's still the middleweight champion of the world. Jan Blachowicz is kind of a more of a blue-collar type of guy. Do you know what I mean? I don't know too much about him. I know what he told me coming from Poland. And you just kind of root for that guy. You know what I'm saying? And the reason being was because I don't want Jan to, on his first defense, lose his belt and go back to the fucking
freezing cold.
To a middleweight and go back to the freezing cold of Poland with his newborn baby that he's hardly seen. And, oh, yes, no problem. I had a little god being the champ, but it did not go my way, but no problem.
Right? Life was good for a few months, but here we are.
You know, I try, I sing my song, I have my robe, but this was not for me. Right? No, is he still the man? Right? Nothing's going to change there. So it's the perfect situation, if you ask me.
Yeah, I agree. And good for Jan. Okay, if you guys love the show, take a quick minute, go to our iTunes page, leave us a 5-star rating, positive review. You can do that on Google Play, Stitcher, really anywhere you can get podcasts. You could find the Believe You Me podcast. You could also subscribe directly to our YouTube channel. If you hit the notification button, you get a notification every time we have another episode dropping, which is typically Mondays and Thursdays, Monday, Thursday nights at midnight. So go do that as well. Leave us some positive feedback and comments. We always love that. And if you guys want to get the entire on-demand library, every episode of the show that we've ever done, 300 episodes now, all in one place, both ad-free and uncensored, go to gasdigitalnetwork.com. Use that promo code BYM. Get a 14-day free trial. I got a couple live gigs coming up as well. If you guys are in Fairfield, Connecticut, I'll be there on March 26th. And then April 16th and 17th, I'll be in Tampa, Florida at Side Splitters Comedy Club. So come out and support.
Good old Tampa. Beautiful place. Yeah. Harrington, I'm looking at the notes here, trying to find something interesting, something meaty, something we can really delve into, sink our teeth into, break down, if you will. And I did look at the notes earlier, and I sent, you know, when you send them through, and this story at number 8, Tim Elliott won over the weekend, talked before heading into the bout, putting a significant amount of money on himself. This is the first time that I've ever heard of a fighter admitting to betting on himself. So I clicked the link, and I go through it. I scour it not once, not twice, but thrice. Okay, what do they say? You know, check, 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 whatever it is, check and double check. It doesn't mention anything about the amount of money that he bet on himself. I would say that this is a non-starter. This is a non-story, Harrington. Yes, it's great to hear that, oh, he put on X amount of dollars on himself. But we have no context here. Please explain.
Yeah, I mean, I went through and looked at it. I couldn't find it, which is why I deleted it from the official PDF that I sent you before the show. But he did, I'm looking at it here. He has gotten paid over $100,000 in a bout before. So I'm wondering, like, when that's somebody's salary, when he's talking about betting on himself, the fact that he should probably be cut by the UFC if he loses the fight. I mean, I was going to throw out a number and guess. I would say for somebody to say significant, it would be $50,000. And my question is for you, have you ever heard of anybody actually going to the window and putting a bet on themselves before a UFC fight? Because I found that super duper interesting, just in theory.
Super duper interesting. Wow, that really is a high level of interest. The old super duper. I'm trying to think. I'm sure I have, but I can't think of any instances. I think Floyd Mayweather did once, didn't he? I think he put a massive bet on himself.
Is it illegal?
I'm not sure. I don't know, right? Because if you bet yourself to lose, yeah, that's illegal because you can control that outcome, right? You can fall on the floor, you can do whatever. Certainly in MMA, there's tons of ways you can lose. So, you know, pick your fucking way, which however you want to do it. But to pick yourself to win, well, of course you want to win anyway. You know what I mean? You can't guarantee you're going to win unless your partner plays ball. So I don't know if that's illegal, and I don't even know if it should be illegal. You're just going into this really confident, and guess what? I'll put my money where my fucking mouth is. That should be your prerogative. Everybody goes into a fight to win. Nobody tries to lose.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess there's the, you know, you're trying to win the fight anyway. You can't control that, but it definitely should be illegal to bet against yourself. It should be against some sort of, at the very least, you should.
I think it is. Yeah, I think it should, is. I'm not sure if you or even should be talking about it anyway. If you do that, I mean, it slides under the radar and you win and it comes in good, just keep that one to yourself. Keep good that one to you, yourself. Buddy. Let's discuss these last two, though. Cody Garbrandt. I did see the video of this at the weekend. I'm not sure if you did, Lewis. He got kicked off at a Southwest Airlines flight because their policies is 2 years older, 2 years and above, and anything older than that, you've got to wear a mask. And what else do you know about this, Harrington? Did he refuse to put the mask on the Southwest Airlines flight? I mean, there's two ways of looking at it, right? The one way of looking at it is, yeah, it's not a big deal, whatever, relax, it's a kid. The other way is saying, well, we do set these guidelines, and this is what we say. You know what I mean? And we have the information of the flyers here, right? We have all the details, passports, ID, whatever. He's fucking two. He should have a mask on.
Well, there's that, and there's also the side of things where Cody Garbrandt made a big scene when, you know, he was getting kicked off the plane. He stormed his way into the cockpit to film the pilot and the co-pilot both mask off.
Yeah, but that's different. No, because that's what Callum said to me. By the way, I'm not shitting on Cody Garbrandt. I like Cody, and I definitely do sympathize in this situation. But, however, the pilots are separated from everybody in the plane. And they have a very, very secure door. But while we're talking, do we have the actual video? You said he caused a big scene. Let's take a look. Oh, well done, Brian. Let's take a look. Look. Sound.
This is his video.
Yeah, there's no sound on the video. So I guess there must have been some kind of regulations or stuff they were saying.
She's there.
I mean, pretty fucking ballsy to storm your way into a cockpit. I'm pretty sure that breaks some other laws, too.
Yeah, come on, you've been on enough little domestic flights. You're not exactly where the toilet is, you know, there's the cockpit there. I mean, they haven't taken off, it's always open, you know what I'm saying? So I hear what you're saying, but yeah, no, there's two sides. I get it. It sounds like the fucking air hostess was being a little bit anal, right? You know what I mean? And just being a total Jobsworth. Do you guys say that expression, a Jobsworth?
No.
Right, yeah, it's a UK thing. You know, someone takes their job so serious and they follow the rules and they're totally pedantic about it. You call them a Jobsworth. So it sounds like the air hostess was being a little, you know, a little stickler for the rules. You could have let that one slide if you wanted to. But also on the flip side, I guess when you do buy an air ticket and they're the rules. If them's the rules, them's the rules, Lewis. And everybody
yeah, just
knows,
like, I just don't like break Aljo rules. Putting his knee down. I mean, those are the rules. He's playing by the rules. Everyone else is playing by the rules. Cody Garbrandt, here he is throwing an illegal knee. An illegal knee to a down opponent, proverbially.
Jesus Christ, Cody. Just play by the rules, man. Jesus. Cody's out there kneeing people in the head. I mean, what the hell?
On International Women's Day. He's kneeing women in the head.
At 40,000 feet. You know what I mean? That sucks. The whole mask thing is annoying for everybody. Just put your damn mask on. What is this with Luke Rockhold? You sent me a link to Submission Underground, which is an Australian podcast for MMA. Rival, I might say. So fuck them, Harrington. Been on there a few times, though. So
Podcast wars. We don't like them.
We don't like them. You sent me the link to the story. There was a link for the interview. It was like an hour long. I read some of it. He basically went and rescued someone's car.
Nope. Yeah, no, did not realize my mic was muted. Sorry, people were walking through. So he said they went to Tulum, which is, you know, in Mexico, and a buddy's car got stolen. He tracked it. No, sorry. It got stolen while he was in Tulum. So they track it down to some, you know, bad neighborhood in the ghetto of downtown Los Angeles. And Luke basically was like, yeah, I scoped out the situation. We did a bit of a stakeout. We found out when people were not going to be available. He had the extra set of car keys, just walked up to the guy's driveway, hopped in the car and stole his buddy's car back from the ghetto.
Bisping, is that how you would have handled it, or you would have waited to see the guys and then fucking... Give me your left hook, Larry.
Listen. There's a ceasefire in the war. Okay, so I'm not breaking the peace treaty. Me and Luke Rocco, we're good these days. But I'm just saying, like, there's no story there. He stole his own car back. You don't need to steal your own car back. I'm out there. Someone steals my car. I'm in the other car. I'm driving around. I'm fucking doing very stern looks left and right.
You're not going to wait until they're not looking, right? You want to go right to their face.
I'm going to see the car, and I'm going to fucking bang on every single house door until I find out which motherfucker claims to own that car.
Look, you and Luke, you're just different people. You approach things different ways. It doesn't mean one is better than the other.
Listen, we're all individuals. We're all just trying to get through this the best we can, okay? And if some people want to steal their own property back in the middle of the night, so be it. If some people want to go up and take it like a man and say, hey, dipshit, you thieving little bastard, you're very lucky I don't call the cops, but I'll just give you a little thick ear, a little bit of street justice. I mean, We're cut from different cloth. Different cloth. That's all it is.
It's all good. One's not a pussy way to approach it. One's not a manly way to approach it. You're both just different ways.
You just go up and you just beg and you plead and you maybe.
Well, you wait till no one's looking. You wait till no one's around. Make sure everything's safe.
You kick the door through at 3 o'clock in the fucking morning. You backhand everyone that comes in your way. And then you take your car, you honk the fucking horn as you're doing it. You don't sneak off in the night. Don't take my fucking car, you dickhead. Do you know what I mean? Let that be a lesson. And then you run out the hood as fast as possible before you get murdered. Anyway, all right, that's that. Darren Till was supposed to be on. We'll get him on Thursday. Episode 300. We wouldn't have got it without you guys. We'll be back Thursday with another show. But you already know that, Lewis.
Yes, we will. Thank you guys very much for watching. Also got Ben Askren coming in on Thursday to defend his sparring footage. We won't give opinions on it now, but Bisping, I want a complete breakdown of Ben Askren's boxing sparring on Thursday before he comes on the show.
He's a wrestler and thankful for that. That's all I'm saying. You know, it looked worse than when he was fucking fighting Robbie Lawler. On that note, we'll leave you to it. Harrington and Brian, we appreciate you. The Believers, we appreciate you. Be well. See you on the next show.